On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Beastly. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, and it's not a great film, so I don't think it really matters. But if you care, we do spoil the plot while we're talking about it. So just a spoiler alert for Beastly and also for the end of the Harry Potter series. Enjoy.
As old as time. Hello.
What the fuck?
What is that mysterious noise?
I just turned on the hairdryer. I'm having a chaotic day. I'm sorry. I'm extremely late. Not that our listeners will know, but I'm 35 minutes late for the recording because I had to give my son a bath. And then I had to read my son a story. And then I had to take him upstairs, and then I had to put him in his pajamas, and there's all these things that you have to do, and they just happen when they happen, you know.
Exactly.
It's a tale as old as time.
So you turned on the hairdryer.
I did.
I think we both need to turn on the metaphorical hairdryer for Beastly, don't you?
Oh my god! Let's dive straight in.
Let's do it.
This might be one of the worst films I have ever seen in my entire life.
But I'm glad I could provide, Paddy. I'm glad I could provide.
But the thing is, this is a shit piece, to use our favoured terminology. This is definitely, you know, this is the very definition of a shit piece. But at the same time, it's not entertainingly bad, you know. It's not The Room. It's not hubristically flawed in the way that makes you feel sympathetic towards the people that made it, if that makes sense. Not that The Room is the only bad film to compare everything to, but it's a film that we both like, and it's a film that we have covered on this podcast. And it's always a bit of a yardstick for just bad cinema in general. Citizen Kane of bad movies. But Beastly, boy, this is a terrible, terrible film. It's really awful.
Yes, it is very, very bad. I'd say,
and I'm in a relatively good mood this week. This isn't one of our grumpy episodes, I think. Well, actually, are you in a bad mood?
I'm in a bad mood, but I'm excited to talk about Beastly. So I think it's kind of put me in a good mood.
Okay, a good mood.
A good mood.
Is that a Pokemon?
Good mood. Yeah.
Yeah. Good mood. appears at the end.
I think this film nearly makes it into enjoyably bad, but you're right, it doesn't get over the line into that, does it? But I think there's elements of it that are very, very strange and very, very funny. So it has that shit piece element to it, mainly because you look at this and you think, why did you make this? And I understand the cynical reasons behind why this movie was made, because it is based on a teen fantasy romance novel.
I literally only just realized that.
In the post-Twilight universe, this is a film based on a fantasy romance novel that takes a classic fantasy story and makes it modern and set in a high school.
Yeah.
So, you know, it ticks all the boxes for let's make this movie.
Which is also a tale as old as time.
Which is, exactly.
Time being the contemporary romantic comedy genre, with its adaptations of Shakespeare beginning somewhere around 1991.
But in terms of why did this story exist, I think is the main question, because it does not work in a modern setting. It does not work in a high school setting. Beauty and the Beast.
I think you could do it. The thing is, the whole time I was watching it thinking, I think you could pull this off but it's not easy. So, you know, to be fair to both the guy who wrote the novel and the people who made the film, it's very difficult to pull off that adaptation, and but that also means that it's probably something that shouldn't have been done in the first place, because it doesn't really work. But I think it is possible. Not that I necessarily have all of the answers as to how you would do that, but, you know, all of the way that the plot itself fits together is fine. It's more that the execution of it and the dialogue and stuff is just so trite and so poor. It's like it was written by a 13-year-old for their like media studies project.
You can make it, but the problem is that Shrek has done it. And Shrek did it better.
Yeah. Because it had a donkey in it. The lesson is, always put donkeys in it.
Always put donkeys in it.
Yeah.
That is the lesson.
Have you ever seen a donkey?
Yes.
Good. They're like surprisingly cute, aren't they?
But yeah, donkeys are great.
I'm always extremely moved by those adverts for donkey charities. And actually, I get a lot of them popping up on Facebook. All the adverts that I get on Facebook are for like donkey sanctuaries and like Save the Turtles. And every day it's some new cause or some new animal. And I can't support them all. And it makes me feel bad.
Yeah, but we had a very big donkey sanctuary down near us when we went to Exeter University.
You did.
There's a big one down in Devon.
Not the big sheep.
But donkeys are great. Donkeys are good animals. Yeah. You've got to love a donkey.
Yeah, they've got such just like mournful faces, haven't they?
Yet here you have a real donkey of a film, and yes, you're telling us you do not like it.
No, it's a mule.
Mule.
Yeah. I had to explain to someone what a mule was the other day.
It's what you feed kids in orphanages, isn't it?
Mule. Yeah. No, it's also a Pokemon.
Also a Pokemon.
Yeah. Very small and round and greasy.
I'm just imagining a Pokedex popping up and going, Mule, the round, small, greasy Pokemon.
It's like, yeah, like a little bowl of mush.
Yeah.
With eyes.
Exactly.
And, you know, I've just come up with that, but that's marginally less weird than most of the new Pokemon.
That is the classic Pokemon territory right there. So mules, right? Mule is donkey horse hybrid, isn't it? That's what a mule is.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, it is. A cross between a donkey and a horse, and they are infertile. They cannot breed.
Because they have achieved the ultimate life form on the planet.
Yeah, it's the end game. The apex predator, the mule. A mule always makes me think of, there's an episode of The Simpsons where for some reason Groundskeeper Willy gets on the bus and it's like raining. And he says his mule wouldn't walk in the mud, so he had to put 17 bullets in him. Which I always kind of like scared me a bit as a kid, but also made me laugh.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
A bit like Beastly, which also scared me and made me laugh.
So shall we explain a little bit about Beastly then? So Beastly...
Terrible title as well. It's the title of the novel, but yeah.
Yes, yeah. Set in a high school, then it's a high school in New York, and there is super handsome man who is like, he's the cool kid at the school, and he's very handsome, and
he's really mean. He's a real mean guy.
He's got that late 2000s, early 2010s haircut, hasn't he?
Yeah.
That haircut that everybody had.
It's, you know, sort of proto One Direction.
And he's handsome, but he's mean. Played by Alex Pettifer. And he is going for some kind of, is it class president or something like that?
Something that they have in American high schools that mirrors their weird political system that we don't have.
Yes.
Instead, we don't teach people about politics at all, and then we end up with Brexit because nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
So we both reach terrible outcomes just down different routes, don't we? And he is very, very mean to someone who is definitely a witch.
Yeah.
Played
not,
by...
Not just a goth.
No, definite witchness, because it's because she's played by Mary Kate Olsen.
Oh, really?
Yes,
I genuinely did not pick up on that.
It is the last movie that she was in, I think.
Wow. Has she given up completely?
Yeah, so I think they do fashion and things like that now, don't they? The Olsen twins.
So but they gave up together?
I think so, yeah. So I think she was, I don't know if who acted in the last thing, but this was definitely Mary Kate Olsen's last thing. But you can kind of tell that she's definitely not your average high school student, because she is 4 years older than Alex Pettifer, who already looks pretty damn old in this movie. He looks far too old to be in high school, and is a few years older than Vanessa Hudgens as well. So it's like, why is there this 25-year-old witch walking around in a high school? And lo and behold, when he's particularly mean to her, She puts a curse on him that turns him ugly, like a beast.
You know, you say ugly, but really, he just looks like a member of Rammstein.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. He looks like someone who would be super cool in a cyberpunk story. So yeah, he's covered in tattoos. He's got like weird metal bits and pieces here and there.
Yeah, and if people saw that, they'd just think it was a fashion choice.
Yes,
that's the part about it that really doesn't work at all. You know, if they wanted to try and make him like a beast, they should have just made him like a beast.
And apparently in the book, he is more beast-like.
Right. So again, that's a very poor aesthetic choice on the film's part. If that was there in the source material, make him into a fucking bear. Have fun with it.
And then you save on actors as well, because all you've got to do is just have a highly trained bear.
Get a bear. Yeah.
Yeah. So he is not what you'd expect if suddenly we were faced by you're going to become hideous. It's like, oh, well, I've still got my incredibly handsome features. I've just got some sick tats as well.
And he is beastly in terms of like he's ripped as well, because he keeps doing chin-ups or whatever. So if he was to go down like you say, the local club night or the local cyber dog or wherever, he would he would immediately find his people.
Yeah, he would be super cool. If he lived in Brighton, he'd find a place in a like goth band instantly as a singer.
He'd be the king of Brighton.
Because really what you'd want from, if you really wanted to put a bad curse on him, just turn him into Anne Widdecombe.
She is truly beastly.
Yeah, yeah. Not one to mock people's appearance, but she is. She looks like her personality. Let's just leave it at that.
Melted,
twisted.
Yeah.
Out of date. So that's the first faux pas in this movie, really, isn't it? Is that he does not appear like a beast. There is nothing really beastly about this fella.
No, so the title then does not work on a number of levels. It's like, yeah, what can we do to make him ugly that won't be deemed offensive? Because there are a number of like obviously offensive routes you could have gone down that probably would have made it worse, like to have disfigured him or something. But it's just like, just make him a beast. It's an adaptation of Beauty and the Beast. Make him a big, hairy, horrible beast. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they clearly wanted to have some kind of method of realism in it, but they were like, oh, we can't do anything too bad because it will be very offensive. So they thought, right, let's give him some weird tats and some weird metal bits poking out of his face, because that's not, there's nothing real about that whatsoever.
Because that's ugly. But I think that's very offensive to the industrial metal community.
But the industrial metal community would embrace it. They'd be like, we look ugly to you normies.
Yeah, like, oh, what's that band? Typo Negative? No, there's some band where they all dress like that and they're all very happy about it.
Mushroom Head.
Yeah, he just genuinely looks like he could be a member of Mushroom Head.
All he needs is, a big barrel and a stick to hit it with, and he could fit quite well in with Slipknot, couldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, no, I think he'd need more of a Slipknot and masks, which is that's a whole other level. But, you know, what else they could have done? They could have done, like, just made it something freakish that's funny. Again, it takes itself way too seriously. So if it actually did try to be a little bit funny with some of that, it could have sort of broken the tension. And actually, this is the same as what we were saying about, what film was it we discussed before? Ever After. It's the exact same thing, where it just takes itself way too seriously. When they could have done something like have him sprout nose hair that goes down to his knees that he can't shave, or like a third buttock or something, you know, that would be deemed ugly and would then be like out, that would be sort of, it would get him viewed as an outsider and as different, which is ultimately what it's all about, but isn't, you know, a very real problem, like loose feet.
So that would have been very, very funny. And they could have done it in a humorous way, and they could have done it in a grotesque way as well. So like, I'm thinking American Werewolf in London levels of having that dark humor and that grotesque transformation element. But instead, you're right, this movie is very po-faced a lot of the time. And it really fails because of it. And partly that's where the enjoyment comes, is where it does take itself so seriously.
But then they feel like the way that they obviously realized halfway through writing it or creating it, they're like, oh, guys, this film's way too serious. We need some comic relief. Let's get Neil Patrick Harris in to play a blind man who cracks jokes all the time. Done.
And that was the greatest decision that they made in this movie, was, yeah, cast Neil Patrick Harris as a blind tutor.
A blind tutor who says chicks dig blind guys.
Yes.
How could he say that on camera with a straight face?
Well, that's the mark of a great actor.
To be fair, his face wasn't straight. you could kind of tell he was laughing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know.
And then at the end, he miraculously can see again.
Yeah, so the witch at the end, it gives him his sight back, and it gives the like maid / assistant / housekeeper magic green cards to get her kids into the country.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you kind of, it's weird because it's sort of equating horrible magical disfigurement with being blind. Which is not good.
And actually also, incredibly offensive when you
and
think
also
about it.
With being the outsider in terms of culture or ethnicity or nationality, which again, that's not a very good message to give.
Yeah, very, very clumsy to just kind of lump all those notions of othering together and, you know, have it all be spearheaded by an attractive man who looks probably a bit less attractive with some tattoos on his face. Oh, woe is me.
Yeah, it's
like that genuinely, it genuinely makes out that that is worse than being blind.
I mean, you can obviously tell here that the real disfigurement that he was given by magic was having massive ham fists because of how ham fisted this movie is. It is.
They should have called it ham fistly.
It is really heavy-handed, isn't it? It is very clumsily made. The dialogue is on another level as well. Every line, it has that same kind of feel as Twilight, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or that same kind of feel as 50 Shades of Grey, where it doesn't feel like it's been written by people trying to recreate the human experience.
No, it feels like it was written by one of those bots they have now.
Oh yeah, robots.
It was written by like a teen movie robot that watched. That's they got Twilight, and a bunch of Twilight imitator films, and threw them all into this bot, and then said, "Do me Beauty and the Beast," and this is what came out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's yeah, the dialogue in it. And
genuinely, the AI that we have now that is writing things. I was reading a bit about this today about how there's like a subreddit where people are creating. There are threads that are created completely by AI, and they're all having conversations with each other about stuff. And it was a little bit scary, right? It's scary what we have now. But I genuinely think today's AI could write a better script than was written by a real person for this film.
Yes, it's not so good.
It's just every single line. His characters telling the plot to each other, literally every single line, apart from chicks dig blind guys, because Neil Patrick Harris doesn't get with a chick, unfortunately.
he does not.
But you know, almost every line, I think he literally gets up, Alex Pettifer at the beginning of the film goes, "I'm rich and good looking and I'm mean, yeah," or something that's basically along those lines, and immediately I was like, oh my god.
Because
you just try to be a tiny bit subtle, or just need to leave some things implied and not said, or at least to express things by day-to-day normal actions of school. They sort of frame it around some kind of upcoming school election or whatever, but he literally gets up in front of the school and goes, "I mean, deal with it."
And I do kind of love that. And I think in the hands of people with more time and a little bit more care, there could have been that real sort of Mean Girls feel to this movie. If they double down on the humour and they'd really had someone who stands up and really revels in the fact that I'm rich, my dad's famous, I'm beautiful, it doesn't matter that I'm mean because you're all going to love me anyway. You could do something really interesting with someone who is that unrelentingly awful. But he becomes repentant so quick. And I think that's where it kind of falls down, is like, this would have been really good if he'd been a really nasty character for longer. But
that's what you like. You like nasty people.
I do like nasty people. Nasty people in movies are interesting. And if he'd maintained that villainy for a bit longer, you then could have had that friction where he starts becoming a better person. But from the word go, via Vanessa Hudgens' character, she's trying to suggest that there's something better about him underneath.
Yeah. If you didn't get it from the fact that, like, he's incredibly mean and horrible to her and she's just standing there, like, at the school dance or whatever, that where she's working, and it's clear that, like, she's supposed to like him, but he's actually just being a complete dick, and she's just kind of rolling over and taking it, and you're like, what are you doing, Vanessa Hudgens?
Yeah,
don't talk to this man.
And that's
for your trip to Machu Picchu.
And that's what's interesting about this movie, is that it's trying to imply, even from the word go, that there's this hidden goodness inside him, whereas in reality that hidden goodness never really comes out fully. Even when he's supposed to be this heroic character, he's still a bit weird and whiny and manipulative. He's very
really creepy.
He feels like Harry Potter in the middle Harry Potter books. That's the kind
where,
of
he goes, I love magic, in the tent of the Quidditch World Cup.
Isn't that what he says every other line in Harry Potter? It's been a while since I read it, but I thought it was, my name's Harry Potter, my parents are dead, I love magic, I'm going to get on my broomstick. And then, like, after that, it's just five books of him complaining about how hard his life is because he can do magic. And that his scar hurts.
And then Voldemort keeps killing all his mates.
Oh, he doesn't really care about that. In the final book, half of the people that he knows die, and the only ones that he care about are, spoiler alert for Harry Potter, his owl and
his
the
owl.
Elf. I remember reading...
The elf is the only one who gets a burial.
I've only read the last Harry Potter book once, and I remember there's like a whole page about how sad he is about the death of his owl. There's at least two pages about how sad he is about the death of the elf. But then when it comes to
Buddy the Elf,
Buddy the Elf, I'd be sad about Buddy the Elf. But then, when it comes,
ooh, there it is.
But when it comes to, one of his beloved teachers and I can't remember if it's wife or girlfriend, who he just
his
sees...
girlfriend does not die. They wouldn't do
no
that.
No. His the teacher. I'll just say it. Lupin. When Lupin dies.
Oh yeah, the Wolfman.
And then is it his girlfriend Tonks?
Yeah.
Wife. I can't remember if they're married.
They get married between books 6 and 7.
And then obviously they both die. But he just walks over their bodies on the steps. Basically, it's like, oh, they're dead, and and that's it. It's like, okay,
they're dead, leaving like a son. Who's like 6 months old.
Exactly. Anyway, sorry, I will not...
I will have to put a Harry Potter spoiler alert at the beginning.
You will, I'm
although,
sorry.
Realistically, at this point, who the fuck hasn't seen all the Harry Potter films?
Yeah, you've either read them or you've seen them, so you know what's
and if
happening.
And if you don't, you don't care.
Yeah, but maybe you should put, also, if you really care about spoilers for a decades old book series, then also also watch out
doing?
For that.
What are you doing?
But anyway, sorry, sidetracked by Harry Potter. But Harry Potter has that whininess and that woe is me attitude that is also present here, and I wonder if that was a deliberate choice, because again, the Harry Potter movies had that similar kind of fandom,
and Twilight has a bit of that as well,
and
it?
Twilight has that too.
It's redeemed by that, you know, that being offset by Michael Sheen laughing maniacally every 5 minutes.
Yeah, which is great. And that's the real problem with this movie, is it doesn't have that kind of sense of fun, and you can derive entertainment from how po-faced it is and how awkward those mild humor scenes are, because this movie is funny when it's trying to be serious, and it is the most devastating thing to watch ever when it's trying to be fun. But there's none of that sort of edge to it. It's really, it plays it so safe, and in doing so creates something that is quite controversially bad.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, just awful. The music is really bad, because, well, it includes Transatlanticism by Death Cab for Cutie, which is one of my all-time favourite songs from one of my favourite albums, but it was just used in a really bad way while he was just looking really whiny, and while he was being creepy as well, and like while he was stalking her, that was playing. And I was like, no, do not cheapen Death Cab for Cutie, please. And then, but all of the other stuff was like pop music of the time that has not aged well, like stuff by like Pixie Lott and whatever. Remember Pixie Lott?
Yes. And yeah. It has that similar kind of thing to the Twilight movies again, where it's just cramming in song after song after song after song.
Yeah.
And
to be like, hey, here's some music the teens like, and here's a bit where he's saying I love you, and the song is saying I love you too. See what it does. It's reflected in the soundtrack. Yeah, get it. But there were also a number of bits where there was music with lyrics playing quite loudly underneath dialogue, which is so irritating. Why would you do that? It's so stupid. That's just genuinely really poor filmmaking, and yeah, I won't have it. I won't stand for it.
And you say about poor filmmaking, the thing that really came home to me watching it, and I've watched it once before. Interestingly enough, I did watch this. There's many movies on this podcast that I've watched because me and my friends went to the cinema and didn't know what was on and just went into something not knowing what it was.
Wait, you saw this in the cinema?
No, I didn't see this in the cinema. I watched it afterwards, good, knowing how notoriously bad it was,
and watched it
for the kicks of that. And something that really you really feel is how cheap it feels. Like everything looks quite cheap. A lot of time must have been spent on the cosmetics, but even that, it doesn't feel very real. It all feels very, very fake, very artificial.
Yeah, it feels like some of the fakest shit I've ever seen in my life.
there's something special, this movie. It's really something else.
Yeah, but it really felt like a slog. There's really just no redeeming features apart from possibly Neil Patrick Harris. But when you know that, like, him being blind is handled in such a weird and offensive and stupid way, you just think, no, I don't want it.
Yeah, it's even that. Even he adds a little bit of energy to the film. But even then, it's because it's kind of distasteful seeing a not blind man playing a blind man as well. I don't want to be one of those people that calls that out, but really there's no reason why you couldn't have had someone who's blind playing someone in this movie. That really takes away from it, even though, you know, he is the most entertaining person in the movie.
Yeah, and I tried to compare it to Baywatch, even though they're two completely different films, just because that was a film that I really detested. But that at least had The Rock goofing around in it.
It had people touching a dead man's willy.
Touching a dead man's penis in the morgue, which is kind of funny. Where was that in Beastly? Yeah. Where was the touching of the dead man's penis?
But I would say that this is a level above 50 Shades.
I don't know, man. Like, oh, to be fair, that was three films of a really long slog that was just sort of a sort of pantomime of ostentatious wealth and aspirational nonsense being displayed. Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as bad as that. It's objectively a much less competent film, I think.
Yes.
Just because, as I said, there's stuff like, the music choices being really wrong and the music being badly mixed as well. And like, yeah, just really bad acting and stuff. But I have a soft spot for Vanessa Hudgens, and I like her. I really liked her in that Christmas movie, but in this, she was absolutely terrible. And even I think I tried to blame it on the lumpen script, but she delivered that in such a wooden way that you know that you felt like she didn't believe it.
Yeah, it's not a good performance from anybody in this movie, which is a shame. But I think there's only so much they could do with this script. it is a real clanger, and it's a shame because you can see that people are trying. So I was reading up about it, and Alex Pettifer, he did really spend a lot of time in terms of getting into the role, so much so that apparently he went out into the streets wearing the makeup
and spent some time with Rammstein,
went on tour with Rammstein But yeah, so he spent a lot of time on this movie trying to actually, you know, get into that mindset, seeing how people.
But did
in the
he
real
find
world...
that he was walking down the street and nobody gave a shit? Because well, especially probably. In New York, because they were like, "Oh, look, it's a man with tattoos on his face."
That's Big the thing. That's the thing. In New York, no one would give a shit. In any city, nobody would give a shit. Come over here to Brighton, for instance, and yeah, you just get given a high five. Do this in Camden, in London, nobody yeah. would care. And so. Yeah, it pains me that people did put in this effort to this film where it was basically, it never stood a chance given the way that it was made. And I don't think, apparently the original book got some pretty good press at the time, but I can't imagine how.
Right.
Because the story doesn't seem that different. And what the issue here is the story.
Yeah, but as I said, I think you could do it. The way that it fits together with him, with the house, like him being in this house and the way... So I was the whole time watching it, I was like, how is it going to get to be the point where he's like trapped her? How is it going to do that without being creepy? And it is creepy and weird, but the whole thing of it being like protection from her dad or whatever, maybe that's handled a bit more sensitively in the book and maybe that helps it to feel a bit more real. That would be my guess.
But the issue is that it's supposed to be creepy at the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be an instantaneous heroic sacrifice. It's supposed to be, you know, this villainous act. And I suppose the issue is that this is a telling of Beauty and the Beast from the perspective of the Beast, whereas yeah. predominantly Beauty and the Beast has always been told through the lens of the
Gaston.
Beauty. Through the lens of Gaston.
A man who's roughly as big as a barge.
But having mentioned Gaston, let me tell you about the worst thing about this movie. There is no villain. There is no conflict with a villain. The closest you get for a villain is the witch Kendra, played by Mary-Kate Olsen, who is by far the coolest character in the film.
Yeah.
So you're kind of rooting for the witch all the way through because she's badass. She's got actual facial tattoos. She knows
magic.
She
can do actual magic.
She dresses like a goddamn queen.
Yeah.
She's the best person in the world in this universe. And that's the closest you get to having any kind of conflict with a villainous character. And so the stakes are set at the beginning of the movie and there's nothing that changes to ramp that up at all throughout the rest of the film. So it kind of just plods along. There's no one trying to stop him. And pretty much from about half an hour in, you can tell that actually Kendra has become more sympathetic towards him and is like, well, you can't stop magic. But I'll tell you what, if you sort it out, I'll also give Matey Boy his sight back and get magic green cards. So you can kind of tell that she recognizes that he's turning into a good guy. And so yeah. there's nobody that's going out there to try and stop this from happening.
Exactly. So, it's like, what are the obstacles to this? The obstacle to this is that he's buying her handbags and she doesn't want handbags.
Well, and you look at, you know, the other, you know, going back to the original Beauty and the Beast, the conflict is that he is still a monster and he is still keeping her there against her will.
Yeah.
And it's how do they resolve that issue? If you look at the Disney version, it is Gaston, the yeah. beautiful meat man that we've come to love.
That's the thing. If you're going to adapt Beauty and the Beast, you have to keep Gaston because he's the best character.
I'll have you know that Lumiere is the best character. And because this movie did not have a talking candlestick, 0 out of 20.
I thought that was Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, dear. But yeah.
No, but seriously, could you have done that? Could there have been some like ex-boyfriend who chases after her and comes to the house and confronts the hideous beast? That would have been way more interesting, actually, now that I think about it. Going back to me saying, oh, I think you could have pulled it off. You could have made it like that, couldn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Because then the sort of the climax of it feels way more manufactured, actually, than the Gaston moment, doesn't it? The climax is, oh, she's going away on her school trip. He wrote her a letter and he can't tell her that he loves her or some shit. I had stopped paying attention by that point.
Yeah.
There was a thing with a train where he'd given her all these letters and then he was suddenly shouting at the train, don't read them. Don't read them.
Don't read the letters.
Why did you give... A, why did you give them to her? And B, she can't hear you. She's in a train, you idiot.
Yeah, the two conflicts in this movie are... transportation issues and high school drama bullshit.
I know all about those.
Particularly the high school drama bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's where the that's where the problems lie, really, isn't it? Is and that whole thing about the end where he's like, oh, I can't speak to you because you've read my letter. Like, it's just high school nonsense.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense.
Makes no sense.
The bit in romantic comedies where it's all like that's supposed to be the big thing that keeps them apart, but it's always just feels like a bullshit communication issue. And I deal with those over email, you know, all day at work, so I don't need to see them in films, thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not good. It's not good. You just end up feeling frustrated at the end of this film.
Well, I didn't even feel frustrated. I was just like, oh, I'm glad it's over. That was that. Now I can go back to reading books.
Did you enjoy Dakota Johnson's performance in this movie?
She has all the 2 minutes she was in it.
She has a tiny role. She is Beastie Man's high school girlfriend. Beastie Boy, who within like 5 seconds is dating his best friend.
Yep.
After he disappears, which is nice.
Yeah, maybe she's the true beast.
Maybe she is the true beast.
Yeah.
So she's in it. You know, that's good. But yeah, there's just very little here of substance.
Not much to get hold of.
And what they try to create substance out of just ends up really failing worse than the bits where it is just plodding along, being a bit silly.
Yeah. It's not even silly in a good way, is it? Which is usually the thing with these kind of films. Often, because when people try very hard with these kind of films, they do end up inadvertently being a bit silly, and it makes them funny. But it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't even feel silly fun.
No, it nearly gets there a few times. I think if it had doubled down on the melodrama and really tried to go for it as a serious film, it would have ended up being very, very funny unintentionally.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
But I do think there is that, you know, that if they'd really made him a bastard and they'd made it a very satirical look at it, I think that also could have worked well. But making a movie earnest like this just didn't work.
No, but it didn't even feel earnest to me as well. That's the thing. It felt fake because all of the lines were so wooden and so constructed. And yeah, as you say, it felt like they were written by a 13-year-old boy or sort of an algorithm version of a 13-year-old boy. And it's just like, yeah.
Yeah,
not good.
I wouldn't necessarily think that it's made with a male-centric view in mind. I think it is aimed at a female demographic. And it's written, it feels like fan fiction is what it feels like. It feels like fan fiction, something written on the internet and chucked up by someone.
Yeah.
And it's
that's exactly right. It feels like fan fiction and not good fan fiction either.
No.
And I'm sure that the novel is competent, at least in that sense, because otherwise it probably would just have ended up as fan fiction online. Right?
No, and I think the fact that it, you know, it did have a pretty decent reception shows that there must be something more to it. And so, yeah, I do wonder how good the book is. If anyone who's listening has read the book, then let us know. Did you enjoy it? Is it good?
I wonder if anyone's read it. It was from 2007.
Yeah, so there's got to be some like people around who are listening who were in that phase at that time who were really into like the Twilight era kind of stuff.
Because I wonder, when did the first Twilight book come out? I should know this because the company I work for published it. It was before that, okay. Because the first film came out in 2008. So it wasn't that far after. 2005 it came out. Okay, right.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, 3 years after the first Twilight comes out, out comes Beastly. Funny that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's how trends work in fiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... I would be interested to read it, but I would never have the time. This is the thing. It's the kind of thing where, like, if you had infinite time, then you'd read it. But time is money.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have the magic of about time.
The
underused superpower of Matey Boy in that film.
Yeah, the superpower that is used for bad.
Yeah.
And that defies the logic of itself by allowing him to go back to the beach when he was a kid with his dead father.
Yes.
Yeah. And It's just like, and none of it's absurd. That's the other thing as well that often makes bad films funny is absurdity. But you know, there's no "you're tearing me apart, Lisa." There are a few bits where like he's a bit angry and he grunts and groans, and that it is kind of funny. But mostly, it's like you can't even laugh at it. It's not even laughably bad.
Yeah, there's very little in here that's laughably bad. I think some of the dialogue is good. I think, you know,
you mean
really...
bad.
Yes, but good bad, where you can laugh at it. So I really enjoyed Kyle/Hunter saying, "My dad always said how much people like you is directionally proportional to what you look like." It's like, yeah, that's a good message. That's a good message to tell your children.
But that's that's exactly like a perfect example of one of the lines that is just saying the message of the film, or like everything that the character is supposed to be, just saying it out loud with no trace of like irony or anything.
Yeah, and I really dig those moments, and I think when it's at its heavy-handed best, it does nearly stray into so bad it's good territory. And I think like if you were watching this with a bunch of people, you'd find a lot more fun in it.
Instead
of just watching it on your own. So I watched this on my own because I don't think there's any way I'd ever get my other half to watch this shit.
Yes, it's, same here.
It's but yeah, there's something more that. There's something more fun to be found here, if only for the cliched, "I like writing handwritten letters to people" nonsense and things like that.
I forgot about that. He says over and over he likes writing letters when like he doesn't even have, they didn't even have smartphones. He appears to have like a BlackBerry at one point, and he's looking at like a really fake-o version of MySpace and looking at her stuff and creeping on her on the internet. It's just, yeah.
Well, it's worth remembering that this movie came out in 2011, but it was finished before that. So it is kind of in the era, it's in the era slightly before like smartphones became a big thing, where things like BlackBerries were being used more widely.
People somehow were managing to type out messages with those tiny keys.
tiny keyboards.
Literally like not even the quarter of the size of a thumb. How do people do it? How was that a thing? I'm angry that that happened.
It worked though, didn't it, for a while? Blackberries were Blackberries were a thing for a while. There's moments, but there's not enough. I think if you were watching this with other people, you'd get more out of it.
As it stands,
probably not.
No, I don't recommend watching this film. I'm going to say at the beginning when I do my like spoiler thing, I'll be like, just listen, don't even bother watching it. And no. I rarely, usually if a film is bad, I'm like, well, watch it because you have to see it because it's bad. But I don't know. I feel like watching this is a waste of anyone's time.
No, you've got to leave that just for the ones which are completely morally bankrupt.
It's not morally bankrupt, but it's halfway there.
Yeah, but it's not to the same extent as Baywatch or 50 Shades, where 50 Shades is rotten to its core.
I feel like this is as bad as those films.
No, because this one, it's trying to come from a good place. It's trying to say, you know, being a good person is what's important.
Well, Baywatch is trying to come from a good place. It's got The Rock in it.
It's telling you to touch dead man's penis.
It comes from a rock and a hard place.
Whereas, yeah, the other movies are just completely morally bankrupt entirely. This one is trying to put together a good message. It's just failing really, really badly.
Yeah, but don't you think ultimately the message is like, oh, he's hot and he gets to be hot again, so it's fine. It's like, oh, what if like you're actually, you know, it's perceived to be ugly by society and you can't change it? It's like the fact that he gets to be hot again at the end just isn't fair. I think he should have to stay as a member of Rammstein. and they should have to keep being in love through that.
Well, if at the end there is that thing,
because like
where,
she loves him anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing. At the end, he thinks he's run out of time anyway.
Yeah.
And he seems to be happy with his lot.
Whereas I also think in regular Beauty and the Beast, he should have just stayed as a beast, and that's why Shrek is good, because they get to be Shreks.
Yes, exactly. Whereas here I think that might have been a better ending to have. Having him fail, because it goes to the Disney ending where you think they've run out of time, but then they haven't. Frozen is the prime example of that. But I think it's trying to put together a good message, because he becomes a better person over the course of the film.
He does, yeah. he becomes a kind of person who like writes letters and cries at puppies and likes roses and stuff.
And isn't a jerk to people anymore.
A proper romantic guy.
But he goes from being a super jerk to not a super jerk. And that's something that should be celebrated.
Yeah.
People don't even do that in real life. Jerks just remain jerks forever.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Look at Anne Widdecombe.
She is a constant jerk. She's never not been a jerk.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I'm looking at the plot summary on Wikipedia. And at the end, it reminded me that actually it was a nice moment when the witch appears at the end at his dad's office as an intern, and then like kind of implies that she's going to turn him into a beast.
Yeah, that's great. That
I did like. I will give it that.
The witch is awesome. The witch. I would watch an entire spin-off where it's this witch going around putting curses on people.
Yeah, should have been her film.
Her as like a vigilante character. Mary-Kate Olsen, if you ever feel like acting again, big boys, that's an opportunity for you. We'll put together
our
money.
Next film.
We'll give you a full £57 between us and we'll get it sorted.
Yeah. And we can get Vin Diesel in to be a witch hunter who she has to run away from, or he's like trying to hunt her down. And she's like, but I'm just trying to make people be better people. And he's like, there's a better way. You don't have to do this. I'm going to hunt you.
You see, this writes itself.
It's called,
it's perfect.
It's called The Best Witch Hunter.
Ah, I love it. I love it. We've got to do this.
Mary-Kate Olsen, please get in touch.
Yeah, get in touch.
We love your character in this film.
I really loved her character in this film. It's the one thing that I enjoyed earnestly in this movie. I would happily have seen her character appear in something else.
And actually, I know I complained that it was po-faced and it wasn't goofy enough and whatever else, but it actually was, her character was actually a little bit goofy. And it was like, oh, and whenever she showed up, you're like, oh, okay, now we're going to have some fun.
Yeah, she was really good fun. So that's the thing, is that there are these little moments in it that could have been something, even if it's only to make a good bad movie. But instead, it just doesn't reach that point, which is a real shame.
Yeah, it just doesn't quite get there. And I wonder if maybe the book does sort of get over that line. But I was just reading the plot summary on Wikipedia, and it says there was an alternate ending that was filmed where Lindy gets kidnapped by the drug dealer, and in the process, Kyle gets shot. As he lays injured in his arms, she confesses her love to him, breaking the curse in a fashion more closely based on the book and the original Beauty and the Beast story. Ah, okay. This ending was not used in the official release. However, it was used in the official video game on the Wii.
And what's great is that
there was a game.
Yes, but that game isn't a game in a traditional sense. I have not played it, obviously, because I'm not that
Why
sad.
Have you not played it? But you're a video game journalist. What the fuck are you doing?
I'm going to dig out the Wii exclusive Beastly game. It's almost like a sort of narrative video game, a bit like those old DVD those DVD games that you used to get back in the day.
Oh my god.
It's almost like that, where it's like trivias and things like that in between like little play sections.
That sounds awful. I'm looking at it right now. It looks terrible.
It's really weird. It's like all these little mini games. And the Wii as a console had loads of that nonsense.
It actually really did, didn't it?
Yeah, the Wii had the highest amount of trash out of any video game console I've ever seen. And so, yeah, the Beastly game was basically things like little mini Dance Dance Revolutions, little card matching games, and stuff like that.
That's the kind of crap they used to make on CD-ROMs in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the Wii had, and that's what Beastly was.
It gets worse. The more we talk about it, the worse it gets.
So Beastly, great movie. 100% best film I've ever seen in my life.
If you Google it, some reviews come up on the right. Like, there's a weird like audience reviews section on Google now, which they're all like done by people who can barely string a sentence together. Let's see what they say. I think the adapted modern version of Beauty and the Beast was not that bad. They really tried to make it look cool, but my problem was with Alex's character. He doesn't look scary. He just looked like a tattooed punk man. His appearance was funny and weird, so I couldn't take the movie seriously.
Tattooed punk man.
that's all it is. Tattooed punk man. Yeah.
Oh, bless. Bless people who write stuff on the internet.
Yeah. Another one. This movie is so creepy. The main guy stalks a girl and then forces her to live with him. It's so weird. And then I guess they fall in love. Oh, how romantic. The only good part of this movie is Neil Patrick Harris. Basically correct.
pretty much correct.
Yeah. Not a single full stop anywhere in there, but basically correct.
Generally. They're just doing a Bret Easton Ellis style stream of consciousness.
Yeah. I read the book and this movie is nothing compared to the book! !! Horrible acting, wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
Was there any capitalization in there as well?
No, actually.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Love it, good for young teenagers, a good message and funny, comma. And then it stops.
Very good, very good.
This person's got it right. The only good thing about this film is Mary-Kate Olsen, ... And that's telling a lot. ... Uh-huh.
that is nearly got there before it became too mean.
Another one that says, so good, I cried.
Oh, that's the right one. That's the right review.
It's good, but nothing like the book. So maybe the book is all right.
Maybe.
Yep. Looking at it though, budget, 17 million. Box office, 43 million. So, you know, did it even get a cinematic release over here?
I don't know. I imagine so.
Because I don't remember seeing anything about it.
No, but at the same time, we weren't really the target demographic, were we, in 2011?
This is true. This is true.
So, yeah, I imagine it probably did. It's got some pretty big names in it. At this point, Alex Pettifer was, you know, quite a big deal.
Yeah.
As an up-and-coming actor. So, yeah. I don't know.
Have you got trivia?
Yes, I do have some trivia for you. Neil Patrick Harris wore opaque contact lenses so he would actually be sightless when they were filming. Almost as if they could have just hired a blind person to play a blind person.
Yeah, strange. But there are no blind actors. That's not a thing.
No, of course not. That definitely doesn't happen. So yeah, Alex Pettifer shaved his head completely for his role and underwent 5 hours of prosthetics makeup each work day. He remained in character off-set during the shoot as an experimental exercise to see how outsiders would react when, for instance, he would purchase miscellaneous items in regular stores in the Montreal neighbourhoods.
Yeah, again, in Montreal, there's loads of, like, tattooed punk dudes in Montreal.
Yeah, I can't imagine that him walking around like that trying to buy poutine would cause much of a problem.
Nobody would care. They'd be like, hey, nice inks, bud.
Lindsay Lohan was offered the part of Kendra the Witch, but turned it down.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got Mary-Kate Olsen, because Mary-Kate Olsen in this film is awesome.
I feel like I wouldn't have minded Lindsay Lohan having a go at that.
I think she would have been good as well, but I can't take away from how good Kendra the Witch is as a character. It's great. Zac Efron was talked about to be cast as Kyle.
Ah.
Which, you know, that could have been good. It was supposed to release in 2010, but it was pushed back several months to avoid competing with Charlie St. Cloud, the Zac Efron movie.
Ah, okay, yeah. I have not seen that.
No, neither have I. But yeah, so that's why it was delayed. It was worth the wait, wasn't it? Worth the wait.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really glad that they pushed it back.
And final little thing. Did you notice that, you know, he had tattoos on his eyebrows?
Yeah.
Did you notice that they read embrace and suck? As in...
embrace the suck, which was his weird phrase.
Yeah.
That's supposed to sound really meaningful and clever, when it makes no sense.
And it doesn't make any sense. So I, you know, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I loved it. It's my favourite. I'm going to go and get that tattooed on my face.
As am I. So that will do for trivia. Have you got anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. It's just, yeah, it's very poor. And they also made a Wii game. So, yeah. So that's a thing that exists.
It is. It is a thing that exists.
I demand that you review it for your website.
I don't think that the website would go for a review of a 2011 Wii game. I'm not sure how much coverage we would get for that one, but I will give it a go. Aside from that, where are they now for the cast of this movie? So Alex Pettifer is still acting. Perhaps hasn't reached the heights that people thought he might based on his earlier roles, but he is in a Steven Soderbergh movie coming soon.
Cool,
Which is cool.
He's British.
He is British, yeah. And has been in a few bits and pieces here and there. He still acts regularly.
He was in Magician Michael.
So I think, you know, there's potentially time for all of that to turn around for him. And, you know, he does have... Not particularly seen in this movie, but there is some talent there.
Yeah, I think he's perfectly competent.
Yes,
with a good script, I'd be interested to see what he can do. I don't believe I've actually seen him in anything else, but
You were that enamored by this film.
Yeah.
So Mary-Kate Olsen doesn't act anymore. Dakota Johnson starred in this movie, really shone.
It was almost as good as her performance in 50 Shades.
And Vanessa Hudgens now makes a lot of Christmas movies,
which I'm totally down with. She got the best deal for sure.
Yeah, she got to be in the Christmas Switch, Princess Switch,
the Princess Switch,
Christmas Princess,
the Christmas Switch.
It's
a big switch on the wall, and when it's the 1st of December, you turn it on, and all the elves come in and make Christmas stuff happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, people have gone on to do other stuff. This movie didn't kill anyone's career. The director went on to direct Cake, which is a movie that got a lot of good press at the time.
I've not heard of that.
Film of Jennifer Aniston, which went down very well. People were talking about her potentially getting Oscar nominations, which didn't happen in the end, I don't think. But good performance from her. So, talented people come together to create something quite bad.
Yeah. That's it. You nailed it.
That's it, isn't it? So how are we going to rank this?
How many... So there's the bit where he's got like a tree on his arm, a tattoo tree on his arm, and it's growing like what? It's growing fruit on it to indicate when his time is up?
It's flowers, isn't it?
Flowers. How many flowers are growing on your arm?
So I've got a lot of time left because I've only got 6 flowers on my arm.
6. You're going to go all the way to 6. Well, I've got 2. I've only got 2, which is the lowest score that I've given. It's the same score I gave to 50 Shades and Pottersville. Actually, remember Pottersville?
I'd forgotten all about Pottersville.
I think I'm going to revise this up to a 3. I'm gonna be generous.
I think that's more fair. I think there's more to this movie than some of the other films we've
watched.
Which
is what I gave Baywatch.
There we go.
Because it was better than 50 Shades. It didn't feel like a real slog, and it was better than Pottersville, the film that just made me furious with its really god awful, weird storytelling.
Oh, bless that great film. Yeah.
That's the same as A Christmas Prince 2, The Royal Wedding.
I think you've put it quite well. I might be being a bit generous, but there was things in this movie that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Pretty much all 6 points to Mary-Kate Olsen.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. If it wasn't for her, it would be a dead 0.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or maybe a 1 for Neil Patrick Harris saying chicks dig blind guys.
Yeah, maybe. So anything else you want to talk about?
That's the same as what you gave Never Been Kissed. You gave that a 6 as well. So the question is this worse than Never Been Kissed?
It is worse, but it didn't make me as angry as Never Been Kissed, which made me incredibly angry. Right.
So that means that you scored this higher than William and Kate the movie.
Yeah,
which you gave a 3.
Yeah,
I just think we should, every now and then, we should check in with our scores, just a sense check.
I think,
and
yeah, when
you
we
gave
get...
you gave Twilight a 7, so I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's about right. This is not as good as Twilight. You're not going to hear me saying that about many movies, but it is not as good as Twilight.
You gave Captain Corelli's Mandolin an 8.
And this is not as good as Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
No. It does not have Nicolas Cage playing the mandolin.
So yeah, I stand by my 6. I think that's an accurate score for this movie.
Stand by your 6. When you have scored the movie,
it truly was quite beastly.
Actually, hang on. That's the same as what you gave Under the Cherry Moon. I demand that you revise your score down immediately.
I'm going to put it up. I'm going to put it up off the back of that.
Oh, good times. Good times. Well, it's my choice next. And I do not have a shit piece. I have potentially good. So this is Always Be My Maybe, which recently came out on Netflix. It's you've probably seen it advertised at you every time you open Netflix. Stars Ali Wong and Keanu Reeves. I think they spent most of their budget on Keanu, but I've saw kind of like half of it while Claire was watching it the other day, and the half that I saw while I was in and out of the room was I really enjoyed. So I would like to see the whole thing.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, I haven't watched it, no, but I have seen the trailers. Comes up, does come up pretty much every time I open my Netflix. So yeah,
that's how Netflix works. Although Stranger Things 3 came out today, so I expect going to be coming up every time I open it.
Yeah. Will you be watching that?
Yeah, for sure. Claire won't want to watch it, so I'll have to find time to between looking after my son and whatnot. Maybe when they're both asleep, taking their afternoon naps. But yeah, I'm really excited for it.
Excellent, excellent stuff.
Cool. Alrighty, well, no, I don't have anything else I want to talk about, really. Yeah, I think we're good.
Good stuff, yeah, I am all in the clear. If you could be a cool witch, what would your power be? How would you curse people?
Yeah, if Vin Diesel was hunting you as a witch, how would you stop him with your magic powers?
Yeah, exactly. Those are the questions for you this week, listeners.
Yeah. That's your homework.
That's your homework. What kind of witch would you be? How would you stop a powerful Vin Diesel from catching you?
Yep. Oh, good times. All right. Well, as always, thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate it. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at BigBoysDon'tPod, on the emails, BigBoysDon'tCryPodcast@gmail.com. And, you know, leave us a rating or review if you like what we do.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. And if you don't, we'll get a witch to curse you.
Yeah, we will get Mary-Kate Olsen to curse you with her magic powers.
Yeah. All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.